वंदे हरि हरि वो नमः ओम विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण पृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी इति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पश्चात्तादिशुतारिणे श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। हरे कृष्णा। सो हाउ मेनी सब्जेक्ट मैटर्स वॉज द फर्स्ट वन वॉज द नेक्स्ट वन देन थर्ड वन स्थाना मीनिंग प्लैनेटरी सिस्टम फोर्थ मीनिंग यस प्रोटेक्शन बाय द लॉर्ड देन फिफ्थ क्रिएटिव इम्पेटस सिक्स्थ मीनिंग louder okay very good how many manus are there wonderful which manu is reigning now and what's his name who is he what's his name no who is he yeah no who is he how did he get the name Okay, thank you. And was there any mention of him in some other scripture that you know of? What did it say there? Very good. Krishna is saying he gave this Bhagavad Gita first to whom? Sun God. And sun god, in who is the sun? What's the name of the sun god? Are these fairy tales? So, does sun have a god there? Is sun planet? There are people living there? Are you sure about that? How is it possible? The planet is so hot. Wonderful. Bodies made of fire. Is it possible to have bodies made of fire? What kind of body do you have? What kind of body do you have? Is it? No. Very good. These bodies are predominantly water. And how many elements are there in this body? Five. Okay, what are those elements? Yes. Earth, water, fire, air, and ether. These bodies are made of these five elements. How many material bodies do we have? Two. What are those two bodies? No, material is gross material. Gross material body is made of earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And the subtle body? Are you sure about it? Can you give me the proof that you have another body? Yes. We need a brain surgeon to come up with the answer. Do you get to see that body when you operate your patients? The seat of the subtle body, where is the seat of the subtle body? The head. That's why I asked you. The proof is elaborate. Okay, good point. Okay, like when you are awake, you are aware of this body, the gross body, isn't it? When you fall asleep, what happens? Are you aware of this body? When you fall asleep, you are not aware of this body. But when you dream, do you have a body at that time? What kind of body is that one? That is the subtle body. Yes, yes. Yeah. So near-death experience is real. So that means they go out of their body. Who goes out from which body? Subtle body goes out of the gross body, and the subtle body experiences. I mean, we don't have to go to the near-death experience. We dream. In dreams, isn't it? I mean, don't we experience that we have a body when we are dreaming? Right? Is that this body, gross body, or it's some other body? That is the subtle body. So, this is how we are aware that we have two material bodies, gross and subtle. Interesting thing to remember that at the time of death, we leave the gross body. At the time of death, we leave the gross body, but the subtle body actually remains. And the subtle body carries the soul to the next body. Should I elaborate on that? Are you sure? I'm not wasting time. Yeah, I'm sorry, they're saying the seat of the subtle body, mind, intelligence, and false ego. So you consider the mind. Now, mind is the center of the senses, right? Now the senses are spreading from where? Senses are, what is the, senses are spreading through the nervous system, right? Now what, where all these nervous system are converging to? Through the spinal cord, it is brain center. Right? Brain center is the source of all our nervous system. And nervous system is the channel through which the consciousness is going to the senses and to the objects of the senses. So that's why this is how we can see that mind is actually, the brain center is the seat of the mind. That's the soul. Soul, no. Soul is the entity and consciousness is its effect. And that consciousness is going externally, outwardly, through the senses. Through the mind first. First mind, and then through the senses. Through the medium of the mind, the consciousness is running towards the material direction. Yes. That's why I was just coming to that. That's why I took your permission. We have another body. So now, is it clear? We have two bodies. Alright? How many of you agree that we have two material bodies? Okay. What do I think about those who didn't raise their hands? So, this two bodies, one is this gross body made of five gross elements. Five gross material elements, they are earth, water, fire, air, ether. And beyond that, there are three subtle elements. Mind, intelligence, and false ego. Proof. Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is saying, Bhumi, Rapo, Analo, Bayu, Khang, Mano, Buddhi, Devacha, Ahankara, Ityang, Me, Bhinna, Prakriti, Ashtadha. This separated nature, this material nature, has been composed of eight elements. They are earth, water, fire, air, ether, and mind, intelligence, and false ego, with these eight elements. So out of this, five are gross and three are subtle. Mind, intelligence, and false ego. Like, and the way we act, its impression is there in the gross body and the subtle body. We act with the gross body and the imprint or impression remains in the subtle. Every action actually leaves this impression in the subtle body. For example, when you feel good, when you have done something good, how do you feel in your mind? You feel elated. When you do something wrong, when you do something bad, although no one ever saw you doing that, how do you feel? You feel heavy. You feel... So, see how your action leave their impressions on the subtle body. Or the, say, simplify the concept of subtle body as mind. Just, it's mind, intelligence, and false ego. But let's just consider mind as the subtle body. So every action leaves its imprint or effect on our subtle body. When, don't we sometimes say, oh, that man is like an angel? What does it mean? That person acts like an angel. His actions are like that of an angel. Right? Don't you also say that that person is an animal? He's like an animal. Like a pig. Why? Because his actions are like that of an animal. So those actions leave their impressions on the subtle body, and accordingly subtle body takes its shape. A person who acted like an angel, his subtle body becomes like that of an angel's. And a person who acted like an animal, his subtle body takes the shape of an animal. And when he leaves the gross body, the subtle body, whatever shape it has taken, carries the spirit soul out of the body. And according to the shape of the subtle body, Mother Nature provides him the next body. Mother Nature places him according to an appropriate womb. A person who has developed the subtle body like that of an angel, he is placed in an angelic womb, and who has acted like an animal, places in that animal womb. And there he develops, there the individual develops his next body. That is the basic understanding of the karmic principle. So this is how important the subtle body is. Now we'll go to the next point. Actually, gross body dies. Subtle body doesn't die. Subtle body doesn't die. Subtle body transmigrates from one body to another. Makes the soul transmigrate from one body to another body. And the subtle body, this way, according to the activities of that particular body, subtle body takes the shape and is transmigrated to different other bodies. So subtle body doesn't die. Then the question is, In order to become free from material bondage, we have to become free from both gross and subtle body. To become free from material bondage, we have to, because we become free from bondage of gross body at the time of death. But we can't become free from the bondage of subtle body. So if we can't become free from the bondage of subtle body, how are we going to become free from material bondage and go back to the spiritual world? Yeah, subtle body doesn't die. But subtle body can be dissolved, so to say, or transformed. For example, the subtle body is comprised of three subtle elements: mind, intelligence, and false ego. Subtle body doesn't die, but the subtle body can be transformed or spiritualized. The subtle body can be spiritualized. What is the process of spiritualization? Action with Krishna in the center, right? Mind, man mana bhava. Krishna is saying, with your mind, you just think of me. So when the mind is engaged in thinking about Krishna, then what happens to the mind? Mind is spiritualized. And in this way, Teshang satato yuktanam bhajatang priti purvakam dadami buddhi jogantam jena mam upayantite. That is, when one becomes engaged in bhajatang priti purvakam, in devotional service to Krishna, in loving devotional service to Krishna, Priti Purvakam, then Krishna is saying, Dadami, that is, I give him. Buddhi Jogam. What is the Sanskrit word for intelligence? So, does it ring the bell? So, this is how the material intelligence is now spiritualized. Buddhi. Becoming engaged in devotional service constantly, satata yuktana. Now the intelligence is spiritualized. Now, when one becomes engaged in devotional service in this way, then what happens to his false ego? False ego is transformed into his jiver swarup hai, Krishna Nitya Das. So he is situated in his false ego, is now transformed into his swarup, spiritual identity. So where is his subtle body? Any answer? Gone. Subtle body is not there anymore. The pure spirit soul is residing in the apparently gross body. So that stage is called Jivan Mukta stage. Although he is alive, although he is in his material body, but he is liberated. Another expression for that is Swarup Siddhi, perfection of one's spiritual identity. Swarup Siddhi. So, pure spirit soul in apparently gross material body. But at that time, the body, gross body is material? No. That body also is spiritualized. And in that respect, you all remember, Prabhupada used to give the example of iron and fire. When the iron becomes red hot in contact with fire, is it iron or fire? Everyone agrees? If anyone disagreed, Prabhupada had a beautiful answer to that. Someone did say, but Prabhupada, it is iron. Prabhupada is still iron. Prabhupada, go touch it. So that is the understanding. Because of the presence of the spirit, pure spirit soul in that body is spiritualized also. Iha yasya harer dasye karmana manasa gira nikhilasapi avasthasu jivan mukta sapchate. In all conditions, he is jivan mukta. He is a liberated soul. So, this is actually what happens when one becomes engaged in devotional service. Or on the other hand, we can say that this is how we can see that the pure devotional service is the only way to become properly free from material bondage. There is no other way. Like by performance of jagya, sacrifice, performance of austerities and penance, performance of meditation, and all these other processes cannot give us that benefit. They can elevate one to certain height of spiritual awareness, but the perfection of spiritual identity is not possible by those means. Whereas the devotional service is so simple. Just think of Krishna. Mind will become spiritualized. And then the rest of it, that will automatically happen. Thinking of Krishna will automatically involve rendering service unto Krishna. So when one renders service unto Krishna, then the soul become, and the intelligence becomes transformed or spiritualized. And then one's identity is, false identity, false ego is gone, and one is situated in his spiritual identity. Anyway, so, let me see, I think I lost the track also. anyway, the point actually is that what we are discussing about ultimately is how one can become free from material bondage. What does Bhagavatam ultimately award? What is the reward of pursuing Srimad Bhagavatam? Vidyate hridaya granthi, chiddante sarva sangsaya, kshiyante chasya karmani, drishta evatma nishvare. Vidyate hridaya granthi. This actual bondage is in the heart. Their granthi means knots, with so many tight knots. Our high hearts are tied down to this material nature. But when we become engaged in devotional service, then those knots are cut asunder. Such a simple process. We don't have to do anything. We don't have to take a knife and start cutting it. Right? We simply have to become engaged in devotional service, and it automatically happens. The material bondage will, material bondages will automatically fall apart. So to go back to our actual session, like today we discussed about Jambudvip. Now, which island is the Jambudvip? Jambudvip is the, what we consider the earth planet, which is surrounded by saltwater ocean. So then next is Plakshadweep. Plakshadweep is surrounded by sugarcane juice. That means sugar water. Just as this is the ocean of salt water, the next island is surrounded by sugar water. Then, next to that is Shalmali, And that is surrounded by liquor. Only the problem is, those who are addicted to drinking, they won't have any access there. Then the next island is Kushadweep. That is, that ocean, that island is surrounded by clarified butter, molten butter, ghee. Then, next island is Kronchadweep. That is surrounded by ocean of milk. Then the next one is Shakadweep. That is surrounded by ocean of yogurt. And then finally Pushkardweep. That is surrounded by ocean of water. So this is how the descriptions of seven islands given. I'll just read this. There is a very beautiful description. As Sumeru Mountain is surrounded by Jambudweep, Jambudweep is also surrounded by an ocean of salt water. The breadth of Jambudweep is 100,000 yojanas, or 800,000 miles. And the breadth of the saltwater ocean is the same. As a moat around a fort is sometimes surrounded by garden-like forest, the saltwater ocean surrounding Jambudweep is itself surrounded by Plakshadweep. The breadth of Plakshadweep is twice that of the saltwater ocean. In other words, 200 yojanas, or 1,600,000 miles. On Plakshadweep, there is a tree shining like gold, and as tall as the jambu tree on Jambudweep. At its root is a fire with seven flames. It is because this tree is a Plakshad tree that island is called Plakshadweep. Plakshadweep was governed by Idmajubha, one of the sons of Maharaj Priyabrata. He endowed the seven islands with the names of his seven sons, divided the islands among the sons, and then retired from active life to engage in the devotional service to the Lord. Who can choose? Equal in breadth to the island itself. Similarly, there is then another island, Shalmalidweep, twice as broad as Plakshadweep, 400,000 yojanas, or 3,200,000 miles, and surrounded by an equally broad body of water called Surasagar, the ocean that tastes like liquor. Outside the ocean of liquor is another island, known as Kushadweep, which is 800,000 yojanas, or 6,400,000 miles wide, twice as wide as the ocean of liquor. As Shalmalidweep is surrounded by a liquor ocean, Kushadweep is surrounded by an ocean of liquid ghee, as broad as the island itself. On Kushadweep, there are clumps of kusha grass from which the island takes its name. This kusha grass, which was created by the demigods, by the will of the Supreme Lord, appears like a second form of fire, but with very mild and pleasing flames. Its young shoots illuminate all directions. Outside the ocean of clarified butter is another island known as Kronchadweep, which has a width of 1,600,000 yojanas, or 12,800,000 miles, twice the width of the ocean of clarified butter. As Kushadweep is surrounded by an ocean of clarified butter, Kronchadweep is surrounded by an ocean of milk, as broad as the island itself. On the Krauncha Deep, there is a great mountain known as Krauncha, from which the island takes its name. Outside the ocean of milk is another island, Shakadeep, which has the width of 3,200,000 yojanas, or 25,600,000 miles. As Krauncha Deep is surrounded by its own ocean of milk, Shakadeep is surrounded by an ocean of churned yogurt as broad as the island itself. In Shakadeep, there is a big Shaka tree from which the island takes its name. This tree is very fragrant. Indeed, it lends its scent to the entire island. The inhabitants of Shakadeep worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Vayu in the following words. O Supreme Person, situated as a super soul within the body, you direct the various actions of the different airs, such as prana, and thus you maintain all living entities. O Lord, O super soul of everyone, O controller of the cosmic manifestation, under whom everything exists, may you protect us from all dangers. Outside the ocean of yogurt is another island known as Pushkardi, which is 6,400,000 yojanas, or 51,200,000 miles wide. Twice as wide as the ocean of yogurt, it is surrounded by an ocean of very tasteful water as broad as the island itself. On Pushkar Deep, there is a great lotus flower with 100,000 pure golden petals, as effulgent as the flame of fire. That lotus flower is considered the sitting place of Lord Brahma, who is the most powerful living being and who is therefore sometimes called Bhagavan. So this is how we get the description of the Brahmanda all the way up to the abode of Lord Brahma. So now we go to the subterranean planets. Yesterday we briefly discussed about that. How many are there? How many such planets are there? Even the peacock is answering. He said 7. Seven lower planetary systems. My dear king, Sukadeva Goswami is narrating. My dear king, beneath this earth are 7 other planets known as Atal, Bital, Sutal, Talatal, Mahatal, Rasatal, and Patal. I have already explained the situation of the planetary systems of Earth. The width and length of the 7 lower planetary systems are calculated to be exactly the same as those of Earth. So 7 lower planetary systems. In these 7 planetary systems, which are also known as the subterranean heavenly planets, Bila Swarga, there are very beautiful houses, gardens, and places of sense enjoyment, which are even more opulent than those in the higher planets, because the demons have a very high standard of sensual pleasure, wealth, and influence. Most of the residents of these planets, who are known as Daityas, Danavas, and Nagas, live as householders. Their wives, children, friends, and society are all fully engaged in illusory material happiness. The sense enjoyment of the demigods is sometimes disturbed, but the residents of these planets enjoy life without disturbances. Thus, they are understood to be very attached to illusory happiness. Actually, interesting thing to note here that actually in the Earth planet, you get the presentation or replication of all the entire universe. That's another interesting feature of the Earth planet. You can see the Earth planet has living entities of divine nature. Earth planet also has living entities of demoniac nature. The Earth planet has the higher places of enjoyment. The Earth planet also has subterranean place of enjoyment. Earth planet have people, individuals, those who are divine or spiritually inclined, and there are also demoniac or extremely materialistic individuals. So this way we can see, just as the demigods in the higher planetary systems have their situation, in the Earth planet also there are individuals who are like the demigods. And also there are individuals who are extremely materialistic, extremely attached to their sense pleasure, and they can therefore be identified with the demoniac individuals. And it is said that sometimes the divine individuals may have some interruption to their enjoyment. But the demoniac individuals, the extremely materialistic individuals, their sense gratification is practically uninterrupted because they're so engrossed in it. And so, okay, now I'll just carry on. The parks and gardens in the artificial heavens surpass the beauty of those of the upper heavenly planets. Now, we know that the upper planetary systems, heavenly planets, are beautiful, beautiful and endowed with so many wonderful facilities for enjoyment. But here it is saying that the lower planetary systems have even greater facilities for enjoyment. The parks and gardens in the artificial heavens, they are now described as artificial heavens. In the artificial heavens surpass in beauty those of the upper heavenly planets. The trees in those gardens, embraced by creepers, bend with a heavy burden of twigs, with fruits and flowers, and therefore they appear extraordinarily beautiful. That beauty could attract anyone and make his mind fully blossom in the pleasure of sense gratification. There are many lakes and reservoirs with clear, transparent water agitated by jumping fish and decorated with many flowers such as lilies, kubalayas, kalharas, and blue and red lotuses. Pairs of chakravaks and many other water birds nest in the lakes and always enjoy in a happy mood, making sweet, pleasing vibrations that are very satisfying and conducive to enjoyment of the senses. Since there is no sunshine in those subterranean planets, time is not divided into days and nights, and consequently fear produced by time does not exist. Want to go there? And the answer I heard, my God, no. Many great serpents reside there with gems on their hoods, and the effulgence of these gems dissipate the darkness in all directions. The upper planetary systems are lit by sun, but lower planetary systems, the subterranean planets, they are lit by the gems on the heads of these serpents. That is what is lighting up the entire. Since the residents of these planets drink and bathe in juices and elixirs made from wonderful herbs, they are freed from all anxieties and physical diseases. They have no experience of gray hair They have no experience of gray hair, wrinkles, or invalidity. Their bodily lusters do not fade. Their perspiration does not cause a bad smell. And they are not troubled by fatigue or by lack of energy or enthusiasm due to old age. They live very auspiciously and do not fear death from anything but death's established time, which is the effulgence of the Sudarshan Chakra of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, it's such a beautiful description of those planets. In the material nature also we see, don't we? I mean, in this planet also we see that people make such arrangements. Like, such arrangements for enjoyment. But those are the nether or subterranean or clandestine arrangements. We notice the places of material sense, the places of sense gratification, don't you see that they hide away from light? They hide away from sunlight. They create their artificial arrangements. The nightclubs, discotheques, like pubs. And as I was telling you the other day, like I heard in Las Vegas, the arrangement is as such that I was about to ask, did anyone go to Las Vegas? And I thought that probably even if you went, you would raise your hand. So there the arrangement is like you can't, once you enter there, you can't make out whether it's day or night. Because it's all artificial light. Even at midday, you are entering into that artificial lighting arrangement. Doesn't it sound like subterranean heavenly planets? And anyway, so far, so good about the subterranean heavenly planets. Sukadeva Goswami replied, now we are going further, then going to the next phase. Yeah, go ahead.
They live very obviously, do not fear death from anything but death and
smells. That eventually they die. But their death come all of a sudden. Right? Like, you know, they're enjoying, and their span is finished. They're so engrossed in enjoyment, and because they don't have ailments or disease as such, the death comes all of a sudden, as if the Lord Sudarshan Chakra chopped their heads off. The Sudarshan Chakra is actually the origin of time. So the time comes in the form of Sudarshan Chakra. And these demons are actually killed by the Lord's Chakra. Sukadeva Goswami, any other question? The thing is that they are pious, they have some piety. Yes. You know how pious Ravan was? They have piety, but that the piety devoid of Krishna consciousness, devoid of acceptance of the Supreme Personality of God. So due to the piety, they are getting facilities to enjoy, but that piety is different. The heavenly planet is the place where the residents accept the authority of the Supreme Personality. The devas are appointed employees of Krishna. They're his employees. So naturally, they abide by the boss, right? The employer. Whereas in the lower planetary system, acceptance of God is nil. Any other? Yes, Krishna question. Maybe give her the mic. Yeah. I can hear you, but for others to hear.
We understand that it's lit by the jewels in the heads of the serpents. So, is it explained anywhere? Like, are there just so many serpents moving around? Or are the serpents stationed somewhere? Seriously, it's hard to visualize how it would be.
Yeah. Good point. Very good. These serpents, these nagas, they are situated in the lowest part of those planetary systems. And they have, they are actually in the lowest region. And on their heads, there are those gems. And they are giving out light, illuminating the entire lower region.
Now I understand. It's like how the sun shines from a distance, so they're...
Right. They are giving out the light from the lower planetary system, lighting up the upper region.
I was trying to picture it. I understand. Thank you.
Yes.
Hi, Krishna Guru Maharaj. I had a question about the description of Bhumandala, the islands. So how do we, because we visualize the planets as spheres, so how do we relate that with the islands as like jumping
beaches? Yeah, this description is the region, it's not a planet, it's just one part, one plane, Bhumandal, right? And that region has that, islands and oceans, island, ocean, on one plane.
So
just like Navadvip in Mayapur, you see nine planets.
No, that's different. That there are nine islands in that particular region. But these islands are, central island, as Prabhupada is giving the description, an island surrounded by a moat.
Okay.
Then the moat is surrounded by a garden. Then beyond the garden is another moat. We can see it in that way.
So the Earth planet would be in that island, or is it,
That Bhumandal, that description is, that is the description here, that is not just the description, one island floating on the thing. Like you can say one space that is floating, it is in that region. on the flat plain. And anyway, and the thing is, the other consideration actually is, like, to what extent we can see things with our eyes. Like, there are, you know, say for example, you tell an ant about New Vrindavan. What will the ant try to, like, you know, that can he, so, you know, like, when it comes to the higher dimension of information, our situation is like that of an ant, you know. Yes, your question?
The from which it gets its name, that has 100 million golden petals. Is that the same lotus that is the seat of Brahma? Is that the same lotus coming from Krishna's navel?
No. Okay. No. This is just a part of that lotus. That lotus is the entire creation, entire universe. Yes.
So the lower planetary system, the soul is enjoying, and suddenly the time comes and chopped the head. What happened to the soul after that, to that particular soul?
Well, it'll depend upon their karma. Like, but the thing is that because they're so much engrossed in sense gratification, they're stuck there. But they have some opportunity, even there. There are exalted personalities, like Prahlad Maharaj, Bali Maharaj. And Anantashesh also is in a lower region, and he is imparting the knowledge about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, by coming in contact with those individuals, they may develop the attachment to the Lord and develop their spiritual activities.
Actually, I had two questions, but you answered both of them just now.
Okay.
And I was going to ask that in the planets like Suttala Loka, where Bali Maharaj is residing, is he preaching? Is he, because he's the king, and does he become devotees?
You see, general attitude actually is that don't give it to one unless he is qualified. So there, individuals, those who are developing this attitude of surrender, developing this, you know, divine qualities, then to them they are imparting the knowledge. Otherwise, he is actually ruling over the demons. He is surrounded by all these demons, and he is the leader of the demons.
How do the gross body and the subtle body relate to the koshas?
How do they?
The subtle body and the gross body, the five elements, the three elements, relate to the five koshas.
The five koshas are actually in relation to the elevation of consciousness. It is not really related to the body, but it is a matter of consciousness. But of course, the consciousness is affecting the body. Right? Like the first part is, you know, annamaya. Like, you know, at that stage one is simply concerned about eating. Then comes to the pranamaya stage. He's not so much into eating, but in the breathing aspect. He realizes that the joy derived out of breathing is superior to the joy derived out of eating. And in this way, he goes higher and higher. Then from breathing stage, he comes to the Gyanamaya stage. Acquiring knowledge gives greater joy than the joy derived from controlling the breathing. Like that. You know.
Thank you.
And then finally comes the Anandamaya stage. So, any other question pertaining to this? Yeah, okay.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. I'm pretty confused about the lower planetary systems. If you're indulging in sinful activities, you will fall down into the lower planetary systems where you're going to enjoy, and there is no suffering. And if you are stuck there, you just, like, you'll die by Sudarshan Chakra, and then you'll still keep enjoying, and you'll keep enjoying. So, why will we not want to go there?
Okay. Not that all the lower planetary systems are full of such enjoyment. There's another region of the lower planetary systems that is in another corner of it, and that's called the hellish planet. Right? The real sinful individuals go to that region. In Sanskrit, it is called Naraka. There's a difference between this Saptapatal and Naraka. For sinful reaction, one goes to Naraka. But as I mentioned, that this region, they are actually there. Not that, they are sinful, they are pious. But the problem is that they are not accepting the Lord. They're hailing from very exalted families. Like Pulaha, Pulasta. These sages, offsprings, they are exalted personalities. Okay. Yes, Aditya.
So, Guru Maharaj, is Yamlok a part of the heavenly planets?
Yamlok. No, that is Narak.
Oh, that's Narak. So that's
Jamalaya. Jamalaya is the place where the sinners are sent to. Jamraj actually judges them and awards the punishment. Yes. Yeah. Good point. Very good point. The thing is that, it is not that the, what actually happens is the subtle bodies, mind, intelligence, and false ego, the activities of those are there with the spiritual body. And they just acquire the spiritual aspect of those activities. Like the mind's business is to think. Now, it's not that the mind's activity is stopping at this stage, but the mind's activity is spiritualized by thinking about Krishna. The intelligence activity is to decide what to do, what not to do, what to accept, what to reject, right? And there, in the spiritual, that it becomes spiritually transformed. The intelligence becomes spiritualized, and at that stage, as Krishna is saying, "Dadami buddhi yogam tam." At that stage, one realizes, the intelligence is functioning only to be engaged in Krishna's service. No other activity. And his false ego now is transformed into his spiritual identity, becoming a servant of Krishna. So, pure spirit soul. Now, as you were saying, is there any possibility of fall down? Or getting back into the subtle concept of that. The thing is that, when one is completely purified in this way, then he develops his loving relationship with the Lord. And that loving relationship is so ecstatic that he doesn't have any desire for any other activity other than loving Krishna. Therefore, it is said, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, one of our previous acharyas, is actually saying that from the platform of bhava, that one can fall down, the stage below the loving devotional stage. From that platform one can fall down. But when one reaches the stage of prema, there is no question. From the platform of prema, one falls. Thank you. Yes, Kithivan.
Work in the spiritual planet systems and the heavenly planetary and the lower planetary systems.
In spiritual plane, there is no law of karma.
No, like heavenly planetary system and the lower planetary system.
Yeah.
So the laws of karma work. Like in the morning, you were giving the example, like you're going on a vacation, you are just spending the piety, you're not earning anything.
Yeah. So the law, the thing is that in the upper planetary system, you can exhaust your karma.
And
exhaust your pious activity.
And same in the...
Not generate.
And same in the lower planet.
Yes, because Earth planet is the only place where you can actually generate good karma or bad karma.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, so I'll quickly go through the few next points, and then I'll go to a real question answer session. So I'm going to another next phase. Huh? Sukadev Goswami replied to Parikshit Maharaj's question. My dear king, if before one's next death, whatever impious acts one has performed in this life, which is mind, words and body, are not counteracted through proper atonement, according to the description of the Manu Samhita and other Dharma Shastras, one will certainly enter the hellish planets after death and undergo terrible suffering, as I have previously described to you. Only a rare person who has adopted complete unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will ever revive. So you get the question? Like, with devotional service, you uproot the possibility of sinful activities. Now, once it's completely, not only uprooted, but even when the seeds are burnt, is there any possibility of growing? No. So that is the, I'll read it again. Only a rare person who has adopted complete unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. He can do this simply by discharging devotional service, just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays. My dear king, if a sinful person engages in service of a bona fide devotee of the Lord and thus learns how to dedicate his life under the lotus feet of Krishna, he can be completely purified. One cannot be purified merely by undergoing austerity, penance, brahmacharya, and the other methods of atonement I have previously described. Although not having fully realized Krishna, persons who have even once surrendered completely unto his lotus feet and who have become attracted to his name, form, qualities and pastimes are completely freed of all sinful reactions, for they have thus accepted the true method of atonement. Even in dreams, such surrendered souls do not see Jamaraj or his order carriers who are equipped with ropes to bind the sinful. When the order carriers of Jamaraj, the son of Sun God, were thus forbidden, they replied, "Who are you, sir?" Okay, this is in context of Ajameel. So everyone knows the story of Ajameel? Yes. So Ajameel was extremely sinful. Now, he is dying. At the time of death, he remembered, he called out to his son, youngest son, who he was very fond of. And his name was Narayan, the name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as he chanted the name of Narayan, uttered the name of Narayan, even though unconsciously, immediately the Vishnu Dutas came. And Jamadut, they actually forbade Jamadutas to take him. So, then the Jamadutas went to Jamaraj and asked what happened, right? And actually before that, there is a discussion among them with the Vishnu Dutas. When the order carriers of Jamaraj, the son of the sun god, were thus forbidden, they replied, "Who are you, sirs, that have the audacity to challenge the jurisdiction of Jamaraj?" "Dear sirs, whose servants are you? Where have you come from? And why are you forbidding us to touch the body of Ajameel? Are you demigods from the heavenly planets? Are you sub-demigods, or are you the best of devotees?" So now it is going to further into explanation of the subtle body is endowed with 16 parts. The 5 knowledge-acquiring senses, the 5 working senses, the 5 objects of sense gratification, and the mind. This subtle body is an effect of the 3 modes of material nature. It is composed of insurmountably strong desires, and therefore it causes the living entity to transmigrate from one body to another in human life, animal life, and life of a demigod. When the living entity gets the body of a demigod, he is certainly very jubilant. When he gets a human body, he is always in lamentation. And when he gets the body of an animal, he is always afraid. In all conditions, however, he is actually miserable. His miserable condition is called samsmriti or transmigration in material life. The fruitive activities a living beings perform, whether pious or impious, are the unseen cause for the fulfillment of his desires. This unseen cause is a root for the living entity's different bodies. Because of his intense desire, the living entity takes birth in a particular family and receives a body which is either like that of his mother or like that of his father. The gross and subtle bodies are created according to his desire. The gross and subtle bodies are caused according to his desire. The Vishnu Dutas continued, "Even previously while eating and at other times, this Ajameel would call his son, saying, 'My dear Narayan, please come here.' Although calling the name of his son, he nevertheless uttered the 4 syllables, Narayan. Simply by chanting the name of Narayan in this way, he sufficiently atoned for his sinful reactions of millions of lives. The chanting of the holy name of Lord Vishnu is the best process of atonement for a thief of gold or other valuables, for a drunkard, for one who betrays a friend or relative, for one who kills a brahmana or for one who indulges in sex with his wife, with the wife of his guru or another superior. It is also the best method of atonement for one who murders women, the king or his father, for one who slaughters cows, and for all other sinful men. Simply by chanting the holy name of Lord Vishnu, such sinful persons may attract the attention of the Supreme Lord, who therefore considers, quote, because this man has chanted my holy name, my duty is to give him protection, unquote. The ritualistic ceremonies of atonement recommended in the religious scriptures are insufficient to cleanse the heart absolutely, because after atonement, one's mind again runs towards the material activities. Consequently, for one who wants liberation from the fruitive reactions of material activities, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra or glorification of the name, fame, and pastimes of the Lord is recommended as the most perfect process of atonement, because such chanting eradicates the dirt from one's heart completely. We found the best process. And the benefit is that even if we chant the name unconsciously, not really intending to address the Lord, even we are chanting or glorifying the Lord without proper state of mind, still there will be the benefit. The benefit will be that one will become free from all his sinful reactions. And on top of everything, we can remember the assurance that Krishna has given. Just surrender. Just surrender unto me. And when we surrender unto Krishna, then Krishna will free us from all our sinful reactions. Thank you all very much. Now we can go to real question answer session. Yes. Okay, Ladini.
Thank you, Maharaj. So there are many religious systems, and some religious folk, other than the Vaishnavas, are saying God's names according to their tradition, according to their scriptures. And they are also endeavoring to be pious. So what we've just heard here, does it pertain to them? Or, I mean, I think I want to hear you talk about it, because I have an understanding that we're talking about graduation to Krishna's abode, which is very special. And I don't think that's available through other religious systems, but it seems that deliverance from the cycle of birth and death and repairing to the Lord's abode is available through those other systems. But I would like to hear you speak about this, please.
Well, you see, as long as they're chanting the name of the Lord, doesn't matter, you know, which language, so to say, they'll derive the benefit. Just as Naam Naam Akari Bohutha, the Lord has innumerable names, and in those names the Lord has invested his entire potency. And as I said, consciously or unconsciously, one does. Then he will take note of that. Yes.
Sometimes in graduate school, for example, I read about pious, saintly people in other traditions, and I'd be very attracted to their wonderful exploits and wonderful explanations that they give. But I'm observing, too, they're eating meat and they're drinking alcohol and such. And so I feel a repugnance. And I'm thinking that, well, because of the affection for the Supreme Lord that they have, the genuine devotion, all of that will be wiped away but that they wouldn't graduate to Krishna's place. But I don't know if that's even true.
You see, the Lord is present in the heart of everyone as a super soul. And, you know, He will guide them. Like as you said, I mean, it's true, like, especially in Christian culture, we see, like, so many amazingly, you know, exalted personalities. St. Francis of Assisi, St. Aquinas, so many saintly personalities. I mean, they have genuine love for God, no matter whatever they're doing. Like, you know, I don't think many of them are not really eating meat. I think, like, at least St. Francis of Assisi didn't. Anyway, it doesn't matter. And the thing is, you know, like, when it comes to that, you know, these sinful activities are pertaining to the material body. And when the Lord bestows His mercy, that all those sinful reactions are taken care of. You know, like that means, you know, when He takes you out of your material context and it elevates you to the spiritual platform, then all those material considerations are already of no consequence at all. Like, I mean, consider, you know, like in Krishna consciousness. I mean, I think most of us were non-vegetarian. But, you know, like, by Krishna's mercy, we got an opportunity to become, you know, situated in devotional service. Srila Prabhupada didn't say, oh, you eat meat, so you are unqualified. Indian brahmanas would do that. They would always find the disqualification of a person. But a real, genuine devotee of the Lord, and the Lord Himself, simply sees the qualification and totally disregards the disqualification. Thank you. Okay, two questions here. Okay, Ajay, yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the nice discourse. Maharaj, we are talking about people like Ajamil who are unconsciously chanting the name of Lord once and they are liberated, and then, you know, on the other hand, Vaishnavas are there who are chanting 60 rounds daily and they have 10 offenses. So how do we relate, you know, both of them, that one hand we are saying that, okay, unconsciously chanting is also the name of the Lord is giving the benefit, and when we are practicing, we have to be sincere, we have to be attentive. So both the paths, you know, are leading to the same place, but for the execution, it seems like the Vaishnavas are taking the tougher path.
Yeah. The thing is that when you become situated on the path, then you are meant to practice it sincerely. Another thing that Ajamil didn't have the opportunity to commit is Vaishnava Parad. Whereas when you're in the association of Vaishnavas, that is one big disadvantage, actually. So that's one thing. And mind you, what actually happened to Ajamil? He was elevated. I mean, he got a second chance. And then Ajamil didn't take any chance at all. He just went to Haridwar, dedicated himself completely to Krishna consciousness. That is the difference. So, until you come to that platform, all your sinful reactions, all your, you know, disqualifications will be disregarded. But once you become situated on that path, then you better, watch out.
It's risky to come up to the Vaishnava path.
Well, no, not that. And if you don't come, then you don't get the opportunity to elevate. Like say, for example, sometimes some universities allow some students, some very prestigious universities give, say, take 20 students from third world countries. They have the seats reserved for them. So they may get admission there, but once they, you know, they're coming from third world country, that's why they may get the opportunity to get admitted in the university. But once they're in the university, they have to become serious. They have to perform, otherwise they won't get the degree. Now, your question is, then why come to the university? Don't get admitted. Yes, stay in the subterranean heavenly planets. Krishna.
Well, this question is related to the morning's presentation. In the verse that we recited, it said that even if it's the heavenly planet, one should never go to a place where there is no Harinam Sankirtan and Harikatha. So my question is, if one is in a situation where that kind of association is not readily available, then he has two options, either to leave the situation and go to a place where that is available, or to create, you know, to preach and create that kind of situation. So which one would be more recommended?
What do you think is a better consideration? I mean, you know, naturally, the answer is clear. Just consider what Prabhupada did. When Prabhupada came to America, did Prabhupada think that, you know, he's going to get saintly associations here? But he preached and created devotees, created the saintly atmosphere. So don't be lazy. So if you are in a situation which is not spiritually conducive, make that atmosphere spiritually conducive.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. So, about the Prabhu's question, when Lord Chaitanya was conversing with Chand Kazi, he said, what kind of religion is yours which kills mother and father? And he was referring to the cow and the bull. And then I read in Chaitanya Charitamrita a statement where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is speaking that you all followers, all Muslims are going to hell because you are killing the cow. As many hairs are there on the body of the cow, you are going to suffer. So how do we reconcile that they have devotion, but they're engaging in like cow killing, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself is saying, and Prabhupada writes in that purport that Quran, and they are imperfect scriptures in one purport in that. So how do we understand this, that other religions also are bona fide ways of, you know?
Not bona fide ways, taking them to certain height. If they practice properly. Right? Say, for example, say you are talking about Islam. The Islam religion is not only just to kill cows. That is not their religion. Right? They are accepting the identity of the Supreme Personality of God. And they are surrendering to Him. In whichever way, I mean, they are doing it. As I, also the other consideration is the consideration of a teacher, you know, like unless you get a qualified teacher, you can't get properly guided. So that is one problem. Anyway, the point that I was trying to make, like, I spoke mainly in context of Christianity to Ladini Prabhu's question, that, you know, in Christian line, we find many great, many exalted personalities. They were true lovers of God, no doubt about that. And they produced, you know, many saintly personalities. And eventually Krishna will guide them and bring them to the right path. Most surely many Christians have taken birth in ISKCON now. Yes. Hare Krishna. So there were some questions here. Yeah. No, it's him.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Regarding Ajamil, what pious Sukriti did he do to even name his son Narayan? Because there are so many sinners. Why doesn't it happen to other sinners that by chance they call out some form of Krishna's name?
It is happening. Like, people are hearing the holy name, right? Devotees are chanting, and, unconsciously they're, chanting the name of Ram and Krishna. They're getting the benefit. They will get the benefit. Although they're chanting unconsciously. And this is how the good fortune is being created.
Then, Maharaj, part two to that is, I'm still not clear about karma in higher planets and lower planets. Like we see in Indra's case, he does all sinful activities and then he's cursed. So can one do something sinful in heavenly planets and get a bad karma from that?
Yeah, they're getting the curse result immediately.
Oh.
Like that some person is cursing. Like, they're not, as I mentioned, like you can exhaust your good karma, but you cannot generate your good karma again. That is the problem in the heavenly planets.
My question was in relation to the subtle body. So we know that through the process of devotional service, like for instance, worshipping the deities, associating with saintly personalities, taking shelter of the holy name, that we are becoming purified. Then at the same time, my question is, how do we have the balance between having patience, like we see, let's say we're getting older and we see time is running out. So how do we have the balance of being patient, but at the same time to be careful not to become complacent? Like how to go, move forward with tolerance.
Good question, good point. To be patient, there is sincerity and you are being patient. Patience has sincerity involved in it. But in complacence, the sincerity is lacking. Isn't it? Okay, give it to him. Anyway, you answer the question and I said yes. It is Vaishnava Pura. Because when one surrenders to Krishna, Krishna takes care of him. Krishna has given the assurance. You surrender unto me, I will take care of you. Right? But the only situation when Krishna cannot really, Krishna becomes helpless to protect that devotee when he commits Vaishnava Aparadha. So that's why one has to be very, very careful not to commit Vaishnava Aparadha. And from the platform of devotional service, when one falls down, we have to understand it is due to Vaishnava Aparadha.
Hare Krishna, Swamiji. So my question is that, as you said, the subtle bodies does not die. They just transform from one body to another. So I was wondering, the way human population is growing, especially country like India and China, so how do the subtle bodies cope up with the new population which is growing like into billions now?
Yeah, you are counting only the human beings. Did you consider how many trees have been cut? Did you consider how many insects have been killed? Do you consider how many animals have been slaughtered? Right? So we can't take... You see, the number of living entities we cannot count by just counting the human beings. The human population may increase and human population may decrease. But the reality is there are innumerable spirit souls. When you wave your hand like this, can you count how many living entities you are touching? and they all are spirit souls.
But the soul is not the same as subtle bodies?
Insects also have subtle bodies. Every body in this material nature has a subtle body. It's two types of bodies, gross body and subtle body.
But the plants, they don't have the mind, so you said the mind is a part of the...
Did anybody tell you that? And I'm questioning.
No,
where
I mean,
did you
so
get
in
that?
Terms of... If
the trees don't have mind. Trees have mind.
Even the nerves and the senses?
Their thing is, okay, let me explain that. The Vedas are giving us the information. There are five types of consciousness. Five. All living entities fall in these five categories of consciousness. The first level of consciousness, one, you know, the lowest level is covered consciousness. Covered. Like they're conscious, but their consciousness is practically covered. Trees and plants fall in that category. I mean, this actually answers your question, but I'm going even further. Then comes the shrunken state of consciousness. The insects to the animals, or worms to the animals, all these living entities fall in the shrunken state of consciousness. They're conscious. You can see that an ant is conscious. A bird is conscious, a reptile is conscious, an animal is conscious. But their consciousness is in a shrunken state. Then comes the third state of consciousness called the bud state of consciousness. Apparently, a bud of a flower is in a shrunken state. Right? Its little petals are in a shrunken state. But it has the ability to bloom. But for a flower bud to bloom, it needs two conditions. Exposure to sun and the shelter of water. So when a human being becomes exposed to Krishna, who is compared to the sun, under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, who is compared to water, his consciousness begins to bloom. And then when one becomes fully Krishna conscious, there's the fifth stage of consciousness called fully bloomed state of consciousness. Fourth is blooming state of consciousness, and fifth is fully bloomed state of consciousness. You see, it's a whole lot of information that are available. Unfortunately, the scientific world is missing out on that. Now you go and distribute it. Yeah, go out and distribute. They need to also know that. Yes.
So thank you, Maharaj. Picking up actually on Ladini's on the point that he made in the conversation that generated from that, and then this last point, when we think of the various paths and the fact that there are probably many out there who are trying to attain consciousness, in our practice we talk about the importance of the spiritual master to allow us to attain that state of prema. Can you speak a little bit to the importance of the spiritual master?
Just as I said, I gave the example of bud. The human beings fall in the bud state of consciousness. Apparently, the human being, their consciousness is in a shrunken state. At the most, a man is a civilized animal. Right? So, his consciousness is in a shrunken state. But when he becomes exposed to Krishna, and he has the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, then his consciousness begins to bloom, begins to expand. So, the spiritual master's guidance is very, very important in that context. Like, just consider a flower is now exposed to the sun, but doesn't have the shelter of water. What will happen? The same sun will dry it out. So that's what happens when one becomes exposed to Krishna without the guidance of a spiritual master. That is how important the guidance of the spiritual master is. Give him the mic. Thank you very much for passing out the mic.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. So last time when we were talking in New Jersey about 8.5, Anchakale Namamecha verse, I was meditating on that verse. And, you know, in hospitals when you see, if somebody is dying, you know, when doctors say we cannot help, they call it CMO, means comfort measures only. They just leave the patient there. So, after your class, I got interested, like, you know, at the end of the time, at the end of their life, what they do. They gasp their breathing, and like in one of the Puranas or Srimad Bhagavatam, at the time of death, like 20,000 scorpions bite at the same time, that kind of pain. And in the same way, like this Ajamil story also, he is uttering this word Narayana. My understanding is people who are, you know, very religiously serious and somehow they fall down, it's God's mercy that at the end, you know, somehow God will make chant Hare Krishna or some name, but this 8.5 and Ajamil section is not for everyone, you know. Even in my practical, this thing, it's very tough to even, you know, if we are non-devotee, suppose we didn't go to school and at the end we are taking an exam, it's very tough to pass the exam, just like, you know, reading 1 hour. In the same way, if we are devotee, there is some gap. At the end, Krishna will help us because he is super compassionate. Is that understanding correct or is it wrong?
You know, Krishna doesn't act directly. Krishna acts through his devotees. So what you are talking about, like, you know, like this good fortune will be created when devotees go there and preach to him and chant. That is how the devotees create the good fortune of those souls. Like, for example, in Bombay, the Bhaktivedanta Hospital, that hospital is actually a temple. The patients are getting Jagannath's darshan every day. Jagannath, in a cart, goes to every bed. So those who are about to leave their bodies, you know, they are made, their kind of devotees come and chant. So this is how they are creating the good fortune. But as you said also, like, it is better to practice it when the opportunity is there. Like, you know, why wait for the exams and hope that by some fluke you will pass the exams? It doesn't work like that. Prepare when the time is there. Yes.
Coming one more time for my clarification. The subtle body, when you say that is spiritualized, is dissolved, is it the same thing like, you know, in Bhagavatam it is mentioned that one has to enter the spiritual planet, both the subtle body and the cross body has to be, you know, left. Only then the entry is there.
No. What I mentioned is, for a devotee, the subtle body gradually dissolves or becomes spiritual. He doesn't have a subtle body, it's only the pure spirit soul. And after he leaves the gross body, the pure spirit soul goes back to God. Or even if there is some impurities, that gets cleaned out, cleansed out.
And one more thing, Maharaj, in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it is mentioned the attributes of the soul where they said that soul is immovable. So I was hearing one lecture on this, that how the soul is immovable and how when the soul dies. So the answer in the lecture which I found was that the soul is not carried, but the subtle body on which the soul is there is carried. So directly the soul is not...
Soul is carried by the subtle body only in the material domain.
Okay.
The subtle body doesn't have anything to do with the spiritual journey. In order to complete your spiritual journey, you have to be free from the subtle body. Subtle body is actually the perverted in a reflection of the activities of the soul. Right?
Right.
It's subtle body only is on both gross and subtle bodies are in the context of this material nature.
Okay.
So in order to go back to the spiritual world, one has to become free from both the gross and subtle. Now the freedom from the gross body comes at the time of death. But for becoming free from the subtle body, it needs preparation. Hare Krishna. Okay, Aditya.
So Guruji, in the starting you're talking of how the seat of the subtle body is in the head. So, when we actually refer to Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Sarvasya Chaham Riddhi Sannivesha, so Krishna gives intelligence, forgetfulness. So, is that intelligence and forgetfulness same as the Dadami Buddhi Yoga principle, or here he's talking more of in the material realm?
No, that is Krishna is giving the smriti, remembrance, and forgetfulness. Both are, that is in the material context. That is not Buddhi Yogam. But when one becomes a devotee, then yes, then Krishna gives the Buddhi Yogam.
So in this verse it says, Sarvasya Chaham Ridhisam, that I am seated in the heart. So in that way that material intelligence is from the heart. Yes, sir.
It's coming from the soul and the soul is in the heart. Like it is, you see, let's put it this way. Soul is in the heart. The consciousness is coming. Consciousness is moving in the material direction. So when the consciousness moves in the material direction, it is the mind through which the consciousness goes towards the material direction. So, whereas Krishna is situated in the heart, initially or generally as the witness. But when one develops devotion to Krishna, then Krishna is not a witness anymore. Then Krishna becomes, Krishna reciprocates, Krishna responds.
One more question. So you know, we're discussing a little bit about Vaishnava Aparad, and I was thinking that in our spiritual life, when we actually, like, face some obstacles, or it may be some, like, we may have, like, some desires which, you know, we had not had for many years, and it just, like, sprouts up again. Like, is it due to Vaishnava Aparad? If so, then how do we, like, deal with it?
I didn't get your question.
Like in our spiritual journey, Guru Maharaj, like sometimes we may have like, maybe we had some previous bad habits and we have not, you know, like we have, for many years we have not come across it. And again, after like some time, it's actually again, you're feeling the urge to satisfy desires.
Yeah, that's different from Vaishnava. That is not necessarily Vaishnava. It can be Vaishnava also, but not necessarily Vaishnava. Like some bad habits may come out. Say for example, somebody has become a devotee and then he gets into a bad association. And that bad association inspires him to indulge in some sinful activities. So if that happens accidentally like that, then generally Krishna forgives that. That's an accidental fall down. So these accidental fall downs, Krishna. But the thing is, if one deliberately goes that, continues to do that, then, you know, Because you see, Krishna being in the heart, he knows the kind, what actually is the cause. If somebody had some, you know, not really, he didn't really want to do that, but it happened. And as you said, like maybe due to the past karmic reactions, just comes out. You know, Krishna will take care of that. But that doesn't mean that we should deliberately take advantage of that. Oh, Krishna will forgive me. That's what Prabhupada always criticized, actually. That, yes, Krishna will take care of all your sinful reactions. But once Krishna takes care of your sinful reactions, don't commit sinful activities. Like if, and again Prabhupada gives the example, that you have committed a crime, you go to the judge, and you beg forgiveness. The judge forgives you. You commit it again, and you are arrested, taken to the judge. The judge might say that, well, this was an accidental thing. He didn't, you know, like, didn't really deliberately intend to do that. He may forgive you. But if you go for the third time, then what will the judge say? No more forgiveness. So that is how it is.
And like, how do we actually like deal with, because we are in society of Vaishnavas and, you know, we are working with different devotees, and there may be knowingly or sometimes even unknowingly, like when we are all engaged in seva, there may be some Vaishnava pride, like someone may be hurt by the way we are doing a particular seva. So, and we may not even realize that, oh, that person is hurt from it. Then how do we
about that, Prabhupada said that even in a family, sometimes the brothers fight. But after 5 minutes, they become friends again. So that's one advantage we have. We are in a family. Sometimes we may have some tiff with somebody. But after 5 minutes, we become friends again. Or we should become friends again. We should not hold the grudge. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay, last question. Okay. I'll take a few questions. Yeah.
People that do yoga, like pranayama or hatha yoga, can we tell them that only bhakti yoga will dissolve the subtle body?
Yeah. Those pranayams are not pranayams, they're tamasha. Tamasha means a joke. okay, that question there, and then... No. Oh, you had a question. Okay, I'll take it after that.
Maharaj, you already explained about aparad, but I have some more detailed explanation I need from you. Yes, our society is ISKCON. We are always, when you enter into ISKCON society, you gradually go up and up and up. So you always have some leadership role when you go up and up. And then when you're thinking about Vaishnava Prad and you want to give some suggestions or some criticisms, you're always afraid because it's going to be Vaishnava Prad and we probably cannot do our really duty that we're supposed to do. How can you deal with this kind of situations? Because
okay, so when it is a duty or a responsibility,